Thank you very much, Professor Dugan, for agreeing to this interview. It's a great honor to be able to talk to you in this way, because I understand things are extremely difficult where you are right now. So thank you so much, first and foremost, for taking the time to be here.
I'm here, Rob.
Yeah, I was just wondering what you thought the level of hope was right now, because at the moment it does seem that the world is sliding towards some kind of high level conflict or even a nuclear conflict. Do you think it'll get to that level, or do you think there is still hope?
Before it begins, there is still hope. When it begins, it will be too late. So I think that now situation is very, very difficult and very critical. And the problem is that Western elite conceived, understood the fall of the Soviet Union as the beginning of complete hegemony and domination of Western values, Western system, post-modern liberalism as unique system for everybody. So that was the new kind of Western racism. So the racism was not this time neither biological nor religious, but cultural. So there is only one culture, only one ideology of human rights. There is only one anthropology based on individualism. There is only one set of values, universal one set of values that is obligatory for any cultures, for every people, every state, without consideration of the history of the cultural identity. There is no such such thing as identity. So everybody, essence doesn't exist. There is only progress, the process, and everything is in the fluent way. Liquid society of Bauman is a kind of destiny, and it should be imposed universally. And when, after the 90s and the early 2000s, it seemed that new actors appeared on the scene, on the world scene, as China and Russia, without the will to accept that, that has created a kind of growing conflict between universalism of new liberal globalist postmodern elite of the West and this new or old resurging, re-emerging powers with different agenda, with different set of values, partly open to the West, but partly closed to the West. So willing to to exchange, to cooperate, to continue a dialogue, but not willing to accept everything on demand, for example. Don't without the will to totally betray any kind of inner sovereignty in order for this global government. So that has created from the very beginning of the Putin's rule a kind of growing gap. And the Xi Jinping rule as well. And that created more and more and more this gap. And with special military operation, this gap appeared to be abyss open in front of us. And that was, so that is how we came to the war and the possibility of nuclear conflict, because in this regional conflict with Ukraine appeared two contradictory powers or ideas: multipolarity versus unipolarity, Western hegemony, liberal globalist versus against a dialogue of different civilizations. Finally, Fukuyama versus Huntington. Putin and Xi Jinping, they are Huntington, and Biden is Fukuyama. Unipolar world or end of history versus multipolar world and the clash maybe of civilizations. That is what is decided now in Ukraine. So what is decided now on the global scale and why nuclear conflict is possible? It is not the nuclear conflict between Soviet camp and capitalist camp, because there is no socialist camp, Soviet camp anymore. But there is multipolar club that is growing and emerging on the global scale, global scene, against unipolar club, forum of democracies and so on, the League of Democracies appearing on the other hand. But this time, when Russia is definitely on the scale of multipolarity with all the nuclear weapon that we possess, that creates a kind of conditions for the nuclear conflict between unipolarity and multipolarity, because multipolarity and unipolarity both possess a nuclear weapon, and nobody will accept the victory of the other, because the multipolar world should mean and will mean the end of unipolar world. And the unipolar world, if it wins, will means immediately the end of any effort to affirm some alternative, some sovereignty, some full-scale geopolitical and civilizational independence from any new power. So that is the stake. What is on the stake? And the nuclear conflict and already going on war, ongoing of war that is going now, it is about that.
So, do you think there's the origin of this is really cultural, or is there a kind of economic motor behind this growing divide between globalism on the one hand and the attempt to reassert some kind of national or more local identity? Is the root cultural, do you think? Do you think Huntington explains it well, or is there something else going on? Behind that cultural mask, do you think?
So, if we consider geopolitics, we see immediately that, for example, the concepts of land power and sea power that are main actors of the geopolitical understanding of world history, we cannot describe this dualism as purely cultural. That is something more. So, because the capitalism is cultural phenomenon, and for example, the logic of liberal capitalism in its global version is the kind of reflection of some cultural Protestant disposition, dispositive. So it is very interesting. So sea power, the Western power, British power, Anglo-Saxon power, and globalist power of the United States, that is not just only cultural phenomenon. It is as well economical, strategical, social, technological. So that is sea power. So the concept of sea power is multi-layer concept. It includes economy, it includes culture, history, ethnical specificity of Anglo-Saxon psychology, and many other elements. The same for land power. Russia now and China, both maybe Islamic world and maybe Latin America, India and Africa in the future, that is alternative camp that represents much more traditional society with traditional values. So land power, it is not just Russian cultural or national identity. It's something deeper, much deeper. That is a system of values based on heroism of heroic, vertical, hierarchical society, maybe authoritarian, maybe totalitarian, but in the sense of the tradition, so a spiritual one. And that is a kind of eternal opposition between Rome and Carthage, between Sparta and Athens, between sea and land, not only as between cultural elements, but between much broader and fundamental concepts. So we could speak or describe this ongoing conflict as a cultural contradictions between, for example, a purely and radically individualistic ideology with human rights, feminism, LGBT plus, post-humanism, transhumanism, transgender people, minority rule, and so on, because it is cultural manifestation of the radical development of some individualism that we could fix and find in the beginning of the Anglo-Saxon modernity, at least. Because when Anglo-Saxon people was the part of European Middle Age structure, there was nothing of the sort. That were Anglo-Saxons were the part of the continent, land power, European land mass, and the difference between French and France and England wasn't cultural, because there was no clear border between them. They were mixed, but with the beginning of the modernity, with Cromwell, with Protestant reforms, and so on, there was the split, and British Island became sheep. Became the manifestation of sea power in a cultural way, in economical way, technological way, industrial, colonial, and slavery. And that was the beginning of the sea power. The sea power that now tries to pretend to be unique form of organization of cultural, of society. Capitalism is regarded as universal value, liberal democracy as universal value, globalism, individualism, planetarism as universal value, radical individualism and post-individualism is considered to be universal value. So everybody should be LGBT. If you are not LGBT, you are fascist, so you should be destroyed immediately because you violate the basic concepts of what is normal and what is good and what is obligatory for everybody. And if someone with nuclear weapon resists, if someone refuses to accept that as unique possibility to exist in the world, so that creates the conflict. And here we are. So I invite the people to think deeper that geopolitics is not only about culture or about strategical fight for the resources, as in the Westphalian system, one national state against the other national states. There is the clash of two world visions, of the visions, two contradictory visions of the world, of the nature, of the society, of subject and object. So that is precisely what authors when they affirm, as myself, that geopolitics is destiny, not economics. Economics is just a part of that, because economy is the product of secularized spiritual religious form, as Max Weber has shown in his work on the origin of capitalism from the Protestant ethics.
Yes, on the topic of geopolitics, I was curious, in the foundations of geopolitics, you noted that, quote, China is the most dangerous geopolitical neighbor of Russia to the south. And you suggested, quote, the territorial disintegration, splintering, and the political and administrative partition of the Chinese state. And I was curious, do you still support that in the current context? Is China still a significant threat to Russia in the long term? And will the current alliance between the two countries last?
No, I have changed completely my mind concerning China, because these texts were written in the beginning of the 90s, when the China was in the process to be integrated in the global world. Deng Xiaoping ideas were put into practice, and the main process was to embed the China in the sea power. So it was considered by us and by Chinese themselves as the part of the Rimland, global Rimland. So development, big capital integration in the world trade, and opening of the country for global Western investors. Every element, as well the hatred toward Russia, because the deal was between Kissinger, Brzezinski, and Trilateral Commission of the West with Chinese government, precisely in order to encircle Soviet Union, and to use this Rimland against continental mass of Soviet Union. And that worked, and that was the prize that China gained during this period of integration in the world's trade system. But many things changed from that time, and China proved to be very smart and very clever player. They have accepted some globalist rule. They have entered, the Chinese have entered in this globalist network of the capital, but they have managed to save their identity, to reinforce their sovereignty, to defend their independence. And they proved to be so smart that they could change the poison in the medicine into the medicine. So that was something very clever, and it began to be clearer with last two decades of Chinese history, and the final moment was Xi Jinping, who represented a real sovereign Chinese civilization, a kind of land power. China now could not be considered to be Rimland, geopolitical Rimland, but it is new pole of land mass, land power. So it is traditional society. It is not capitalist society. Capitalism is just the tool for China to reaffirm their sovereignty. And I have changed totally my opinion on China during last 20 years. So comparing my opinion of China when foundations of geopolitics were written, the changes very, very, very serious and almost opposite. And as well, the multipolarity proved to be the only alternative to the Western hegemony. Maybe in the first years after after the fall of Soviet Union, we had a kind of nostalgia, a kind of idea that bipolarity could be restored between Eurasia and Atlanticism. But after all these very, very difficult years of 90s and early 2000s, so it is clear that Russia could not afford anymore and will not afford anymore to be unique representative of land power. We are still land power, but not only land power. So from that, I have developed the concept, the theory of distributed heartland. So there is not only one heartland, as that war, as that was the case during Great Game between us and British Empire, or bipolar system during Cold War. Now we could not afford alone to the status and defend the status of unique opposing poles, so we need the other pole to oppose the sea power. And we find these allies in the China, in the case of China, in the future in the India, in Islamic world, in Africa, in Latin America, and maybe in continental Europe, and maybe in Trumpist America, because this multipolar vision could interpret the Republican states in America as the North American heartland, and Trump and Trumpism as a kind of geopolitical vision of America first could be one of this pole of this multipolarity. It is discovery of North American heartland. That is something totally new. And I think that we need, and I make the revision of classical geopolitics, discovering and exploring more and more multipolarity as the new system that is emerging before our eyes.
Yes. I guess, well, to pivot away from geopolitics for a second, what do you think of the place of the philosophy of Martin Heidegger in today's world? And what does Heidegger have to remind us about this time of ending? And as you put it in one of your books, Another Beginning. Yeah.
So that is another question concerning philosophy. So I have my own understanding of postmodernity, and I suggest, I invite to make a kind of deconstruction of postmodernity itself. So postmodernists make the construction normally, but I suggest, I invite to make the deconstruction of postmodernism. And what we see in postmodernism something that wasn't so postmodern, that was critical in front of the Western modernity, but not yet postmodern. That was phenomenology, structuralism, Heidegger, Nietzsche, pessimism, cultural pessimism of Spengler, or Luciana Blaga, or Emil Cioran, discovery of sacred in the sociology of Durkheim and in the history of religions of Mircea Eliade, rediscovery of cultural independence of small tribal archaic societies that was rediscovered by Franz Boas, Claude Lévi-Strauss, Marcel Mauss, and other. All these elements and tendencies, including Martin Heidegger, they have entered into the postmodernity. But I think that they existed before postmodernity, and they have their own value outside of postmodernity. Postmodernists, they have used all these tendencies, structuralism, my design philosophy of Heidegger, anthropology or new anthropology of Lévi-Strauss, a kind of sacredness, and many other things, the critical of the West as well. So they have embedded this element in their system, as well as, for example, the idea also of autonomy of the psychical realm, of Freudism, of different kinds. So all that existed before postmodernism and postmodernity, and that was put inside of postmodernity. But postmodern authors, they have transformed and changed all these sources of inspiration, Heidegger included. So they have created a kind of amalgama of all that, and they have created a monster because they have added the progressism, hyper-individualism, transgression, gender politics, post-structuralism, rhizomatic vision of the being of Deleuze and Guattari, and they have used and abused the huge heritage of critical European tradition of the 20th century, and they have perverted that. So my idea is not to reject as a whole thing the Western culture of the 20th century, but to extract from the postmodern amalgama some very, very relevant elements that have their own being outside of the postmodernity, and to delegate, to let the other elements, progressism, perversion, transgression, posthumanism, rhizomatic schizoid masses of the Deleuze and Guattari, to be a kind of liberal property, liberal globalist, left liberalism property. So that is not just one postmodern against the other postmodern, but we separate something that was modern, and that is continuing to be modern in this left liberal postmodernism, but we preserve and put aside something that has nothing to do with these normative totalitarian Trotskyist system of liberal left, postmodern liberal left. So that is not about postmodern right or right postmodernism, but it could look like that. But it is not exactly that. It is not just a reading of postmodernity from the right. It is a kind of extraction from the postmodern context, some inspiration, some systems, they were not postmodern. They were very original and very, very interesting phenomenology of Husserl, of Brentano, of Meinong, and of Heideggerian philosophy. That is the kind of special, very original phenomenology, in my opinion. So I think that all this heritage is totally abandoned or perverted in the in the context of left liberal postmodernity, now ruling in the West and now becoming totalitarian. That this kind of thought, left liberalism, doesn't lead to any alternative, any contrary tendency to appear. They destroy them immediately. Because if you are not left liberal, you are fascist, or you are communist, or you are archaic, you are Putin's agent, and so on. So that is the pure witch hunt on the part of these left liberal postmodernists. So I think that Heidegger is very, very precious as a part of the critical Western culture that is very, very, very close to Russian tradition. Russia was involved in the Western culture and participated in it, but always had its own opinion, its distance. And I think it's very Russian to understand and to be involved in the Western culture and philosophy, but to have to conserve and preserve our own interpretation of these elements. And doing so, I have many colleagues in the West that who do the same, more or less the same. Above all, the French New Right. I think that they do almost the same in philosophy, discovery of original Heidegger, pre-postmodern Heidegger, and geopolitics, and the Carl Schmitt teaching. So that is how I consider Heidegger. I consider Heidegger as the part of the real European thought that is and a growing opposition to postmodern European culture, contemporary.
Right. So I guess, as with Marx's negation of the negation, is this a kind of negation of postmodernity and postmodernity eating its own tail? Is this where we end up with? I guess to link it back to what we've been talking about for the last 30 minutes, do you think this will happen with the whole postmodern civilization we live in and the kind of globalist capitalism we live in right now? Do you think that it is, you know, as John Mersheimer put it, about the liberal world order bound to fail, that it's going to eat its own tail and it will collapse of its own contradictions?
For sure it will collapse, but it could collapse in such way that everything will collapse with it. So that is the problem. So can we avoid the imminent end of humanity? That is precisely the clear mark on the front of the beast that is modern global Western postmodern global liberalism. I think that is mark of the beast. So that is Satan. Precisely, Soros, Biden, the people of liberal left globalists, the people who try to judge or rather to imprison Trump, they are beasts. And they are just a pure form of Antichrist. They have started this war against us. They have perverted our brother Ukrainians. They have driven them mad totally with this transgenderism and so on. So I think that we are dealing with the Satan, the more postmodern Western globalist capitalist civilization is Satan. But and Satan is doomed in some way, but the will of Satan, desire of Satan to put inside of this doom everybody else, so to be global, to organize Schwab's global governments and to impose the rule of Satan on all peoples. And finally, Satan will be crushed and globalists will disappear. Globalism will disappear and postmodern European Western culture will collapse, will explode. But the problem is, will it explode with us, who don't belong to that destiny of Satan's destiny, or with us, without us or without us, with us or without us? So that is the problem. So if, and paradoxically, we can start or ignite this collapse. So fighting against Satan, we could provoke somehow the end of the world. That is what we are at just now. So there is the clear beast that is globalist clique elite of United States of America and NATO, global liberal elites, that they are collective Satan. That is satanic civilization in its more radical form, and it is trying to end, to finish with human, to that is singularity. So singularity is Antichrist. Singularity is just the moment of Antichrist, momentum of Antichrist, and it is nearer and nearer. But we resist, and not only us, Russian. So we resist, but as well the people through all over the world resist against that, and they maybe don't recognize yet in us the power that fights the Antichrist, because we are not saints, we are not really representative of the power of pure light, not at all. But the ultimate truth is that we are those who fight now with Antichrist. That is, and we are fighting not only against the West or against the NATO. We are fighting against Biden for Trump, against Macron for European values and European tradition. So we refuse globalism, but we don't refuse the West or Western culture. So Antichrist is trying to establish its rule all over the global humanity. But still there are the points, spaces of resistance. And Russia is now leading territory, leading space of resistance against that, not against purely national interests, one nation against the other nation, not at all. That is the fight against the Western liberal globalist and Antichrist civilization, and fighting this anti-civilization, the kingdom of the devil. We are transforming, we are becoming clearer and cleaner during this fight, and we are saving ourselves from this engagement in the globalism, and saving ourselves, we show example to the other how to fight not against America, how to fight for America, because America is not the same as this postmodern globalist crazy people who now lead it. So a real America is different. Maybe it's not as well, not angelic culture, but it is something completely different that has nothing to do with these crazy ideology imposed on American society with gender politics, transgenderism, hyper-individualism, transhumanism. All that is pure perversion. And I think that the sane and healthy power in the United States finally will join the fight, join the battle, not fighting for Russia. We have no interest here in the United States, no interest, no idea to occupy, to use, to colonize, nothing at all. We have no power, no idea. no tools, no means, no resources, nothing. But I think that the fight is for America against this anti-America that is dominating with the Democrats. And the pure people of Latin people, of Afro-American people who support this Antichrist because it has seduced them, they are victims as well. They should understand that they are useful fools, useful idiots of these globalists. They have nothing to do with the real cause of the real ideas of the African identity or Latin special traditions and values. They don't defend these minorities. They destroy a majority. They want just to kill American majority in order to establish their satanic rule. So everybody should fight Democrats, because not all Democrats, but most of them, and not all Republicans are good, but some serious part of them are much more normal than Democrats. So the comparison is striking, is very, 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 very special, because we have still free spirits in Republican Party, and we have no any sign of independence in the Democratic Party. Maybe outside of Kennedy, who is now trying to transmit some alternative message inside of Democratic Party, and we applaud that. That is very, very nice, as Tulsi Gabbard, for example, did before. But globalists fully, totally dominate Democratic Party. But America should resist, should revolt, and should free and liberate its own culture, its own people from this new slavery. Because liberals, they enslave not only other people outside of America. They begin with enslaving yourselves. And after that, they project the same enslavement on everybody else. That is what against we fight in Ukraine.
Yes, it reminds me of Marcuse's book One Dimensional Man, that it seems from what you say that this new world order is a flat line, that everything's being reduced to either you agree to the liberal world order or you're a fascist. And it seems to be, just the kind of dystopia that Marxists around that time warned about. And so I was wondering, is there a future for Marxism in a post-liberal world, or even Christian Marxism?
So I couldn't judge. So first of all, we need to destroy the dictatorship of left liberalism and left liberal agenda. And we could see, we could invite left and right, the people of different traditions, different religions, different ideologies, in order to dialogue between us. So I'm not a big fan of Marxism, but everything that fights capitalism is, I think, good, from right or from the left. There is the kind of Trotskyism of hyper-Marxism that is precisely what the American liberal elite does now. The idea is, of all these neocons, the idea is, in order to establish real communism on the global scale, we need to enter in solidarity with the big capital in order to destroy all pre-capitalist form of social life. So we need to make everybody internationalist, capitalist, liberal, individual, no nations, no religions, no identities. We need to first to establish and grant the victory of the global liberal capitalism With emigration, with total confusion of mixing of all kind of identities in order to create a kind of global liberal empire, and after that, this empire will collapse by inner contradictions, and there will be the proletarian revolution, but this time a fully and totally international. I think that is what is winning now in the West. So it is a mixture between Trotskyism, Trotskyite Marxism, and global capitalism. It's precisely agenda of neocons, because all the neocons, original neocons, were Trotskyists. From commentary magazine, Podgorets, the Crystal Senior, and other people. They were all Trotskyists who entered in the Democratic Party first, and after that they have infiltrated into the Republican party, and they have hijacked American politics. They have nothing to do to with America. They are fanatical, crazy, ultra-liberal Trotskyist Marxists, and I think they are to blame for many things that America now does in the world. But the real anti-capitalist Marxism, the Marxism that could accept the plurality of cultures, so I have nothing to do, for example, Gramsci version on some new left, concept. So, or for example, left reading of Heidegger or Schmitt, or in the case of George Agamben, Chantal Mouffe. We could have a dialogue between us and our censor anti-capitalist left. And I think the dialogues, for example, as was the dialogue with Constanzo Preve, Italian Marxist, that has practically joined our position. And his pupil, Diego Fusaro, continues to develop this kind of discourse. He is still Marxist, materialist, left wing, but he agrees with us in all the main issues. So I'm traditionalist, I'm in favor of religion, of traditional values, of pre-modern, if you want, society, but our rejection of capitalism and liberalism and individualism of the Western modern and postmodern society is the same. So that is our common position. So I think that from the beginning of the 90s, I started to promote this anti-liberal dialogue between left and right. And maybe that is why I am judged to be so dangerous for liberals, because I am not just right thinker, right philosopher that refuses the liberalism. I as well, I am open to dialogue with left philosophers, with left activists, with as well as those who defend, for example, traditional European roots, as well with immigrants, with Africans, with Muslims. So we need to organize the common ground against the liberal capitalism. So, and in that sense, our powers are more or less equal. Because we will lack something, but we have, some, for example, demography on our side, a nuclear weapon of Russia on our side, on China, economical and financial power on our side, finally. So, but we still lack so many military bases and United States has in the world, or such developed technologies and other things, informational systems, the structure, pervasive and annoying postmodern culture, destroying the brains of young people. That is effective. That is very, very poisonous, very toxic. And we could not steal afford the real defense against that, but we try, and we have the other positive points, and I think that is what is all about. So not about left against the right, but left and right against the liberalism, against the globalist center, against Schwab, against Soros, against Biden, but not against America. If Trump would be in the place, in his place in White House, the Ukrainian war never started. I am absolutely sure, never. That doesn't mean that we would have good relations and friendly relations. Maybe still hostilities would prevail, but not in such form. So Trump would be solution. Trump is solution, and Biden is real cause of this bloody war. Biden and his globalists and the people as neocons or these left liberals, left liberal hoax of Democratic parties, they are totally and fully responsible for this bloody carnage in the Ukraine, and they will be judged for that. And as well, they should be judged for any other crime committed against American people, great American people.
Right. You mentioned Trump, and I was just wondering, there are some other candidates. The musician Kanye West, now known as Ye, offered to meet Putin last year and suggested America ally with Russia. And his plan was ultimately to contain China. But he does seem to be opposed to, as you put it, the kind of antichrist, satanic capitalist world order we live in. Is that kind of movement something that you think can get off the ground in America? And do you think a return to peace with Russia is possible?
So first of all, when Biden is gone, the war could be easily stopped, because the problem is Biden and his administration. They are crazy globalist satanic adepts. So they really represent the real problem in that. No Biden, no problem, I think. So Kanye West, I consider very, very great and very interesting non-conformist person. I would like to see him maybe on sometime in Russia, and we could organize very, very, very interesting trip, travel through Russia, and that could be interesting to exchange with him, with his with him, with people like him that could come with him as well, some kind of intellectual exchanges outside, beyond left and right, beyond white and black, because we need to overcome this borders outside of this dictatorship of the left liberals. And he is the victim of this dictatorship now. He is canceled properly. So I suggest the people like Kanye West could come into the campaign of presidential campaign, because more independent voices, the better. So, and finally they could join around Trump, I think, because you should not like or love Trump, you should hate Biden. That is the problem. And if you will be too split, separated between each other, you could not gain the mass. But I think the people who like the Trump and people who don't like him at all should be united around him if he will be the main possible, my main realist tainted it. But the globalists, they understand they are very, very unpopular in the world. They are losing. So they maybe they will decide to put the Trump in jail, to kill him, because they are Trotskyists, they are terrorists. So I think that Biden, Joe Biden, Blinken, and other radicals, liberal left liberals, and neocons, and these hawks, they are just totalitarian as Bolshevists were. So I think that the Trump and democracy in the United States is a big danger, because they cancel culture. They easily pass from the deplatforming to physical extermination, assassination. So, and Ukraine gave them example how you could use the killers, the monsters, the sadists for the cause of the human rights open society. And that is not already the paradox. It is just the satanic truth of these liars and criminals. So I think we should come to the we should come to the end.
Of course.
So I think that I think that America always was non-conformist country. I could finish with the example, a very known example of one judge in the 50s. Or in the 60s, in the 60s, United States, in one of the states, who was the victim of Holocaust, the victim of concentration camp, Jew. And he fled the United States to save his life, and he was appointed judge. And there was a march of neo-Nazi in his district, in his area. And everybody demanded to stop that, to prohibit that, not let that happen. And this judge, a Jew, has said, if I would prohibit the march of these few crazy horrible and very repellent Nazis, I would be become a Nazi myself. So, in spite of being the victim of concentration camp, the moment when I will prohibit this Nazi march will transform myself into the Hitler. And I have passed through all these sufferings not to become my greatest enemy. So that is America. That is the liberal society. You can despise or hate the people who think don't like you, not like you, but you should be very, very strong defending their right to be different. To be different than you, than your experience, and to create alternative to you. Without that, no American democracy. I think now we're living, you are living under rule where no trace of democracy is left, because democracy is precisely what liberals say you to do. Everything else is not democracy. It is not democracy, the rule of the majority. It is the rule of different kind of minorities. All definitions are changed. So I think try to save yourself. The God bless America.
Thank you. And God bless Russia too. I'm living in Britain right now, and I'm thrilled that we've had this conversation. I hope we can talk again soon.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much.